Marco Rubio, he was talking to Sergey Lavrov. The official readout of that, that's very interesting. This is as of today, merely says that they talked. They discussed U.S.-Russia relationships and the need to end the Russia-Ukraine war. But they didn't say anything about why. Media, on the other hand, is saying the U.S. is ready to help end the senseless war in Ukraine, but no quick deal is ahead, Rubio says. And then looking over on the Russian side, Dmitry Peskov said this about any hopes for a resolution in the near term.
In this situation, I wouldn't be overly optimistic. Contacts are indeed taking place. That is always positive. But one cannot speak of any new dynamics or acceleration right now. Now, we continue our dialogue with the Americans through existing working channels, and we hope that when the American negotiators are freer, we will continue in-person communication. They will be able to come to Moscow and continue our dialogue.
But meanwhile, like Russia has always done, they're going to continue to fight. And the air war has really stepped up. It has now expanded into the sea world. There are a number of Russian ships have been hit in the Sea of Azov. But Russia, as they always do, strikes back harder against shipping. And now a good portion of the port system in Odessa for Ukraine has been shut down because they can't endure that. And there's all kinds of strikes along the operational depths of the front line. At the front line, Russia continues to move up. They have recently taken Konstantinivka. They're now moving up to Slaviansk and Kramatorsk, the last two fortress cities that are left there in the Donbass area, et cetera. And as you were telling me before that we came on the air here, there is another development tactically, or at least operationally, for the Russians on the battlefield. What is that?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, let's keep something in mind. Moscow, Beijing, and Tehran have all learned a very hard lesson with us. And that is that you cannot believe anything President Trump says or anything that anyone in his administration says. That's where we are right now. So there can be no arrangement, no agreement of any kind with Russia at this point on Ukraine. How many times do you meet and how many times do you listen to Donald Trump say, well, I'll do this and we'll do that and we'll hammer this out and we'll put an end to this. Only to discover that he goes home, he does a 180-degree turn and does the opposite of what was said. This happened in Alaska. I think Alaska was the last serious attempt to try and reach some sort of agreement, and they've given up. That they'll be happy to talk to us or at least sit there and listen to us bloviate, but nobody trusts us. And that's very bad because if nobody trusts us in the Middle East and nobody trusts us in Eastern Europe, you're not going to get any financiers or lenders to go back into these areas to rebuild anything, to reconstruct anything, because they don't trust anything we say, specifically when it comes to ending the conflict. They're afraid that if they go in and do anything, the next week Donald Trump will decide, well, I'm renewing the bombing campaign because I don't like X, Y, and Z. We're in a very difficult position there. Now, this man, General Surovikin, is not well known to many in the West. He should be. He's a very intelligent man, very sharp. He was instrumental in putting together the larger strategic response in Ukraine to the Ukrainian threat once they consolidated control over most of what they were initially interested in, those Russian-speaking areas. He's an Air Force officer. He understands all of the various strike systems and how to use them, how to orchestrate them. He understands the criticality of those links from intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance in the air and in space to all of those weapons platforms. He understands that we are in a world today where the strikes shape the battlefield for ground forces. In other words, the ground force doesn't wait for the strikes to lift and then move. The strikes are much more profound, much more influential. He is part of the group that has felt for some time that the war has gone too slowly, that it is being too cautious. He was harmed because of his public statements supporting Prigozhin. People will forget Prigozhin. He was the one that led this whole charge to Moscow, trying to get President Putin's attention. he's now gone the way of the buffalo. And Surovikin was punished by being sent to Africa, where he's done excellent work for the Russians in Africa. What I'm trying to say is that this is a very different personality with a different view of the battlefield and how to do things. I expect he's going to have a significant impact. And he is going to definitely finish the job up in Kharkov. And I think we will then see movement towards Odessa. And eventually, I think we will see the Ukrainians cleared completely from the area of Ukraine east of the Dnieper River. I'd be surprised if that didn't happen before long. This is not somebody who is uncertain, undecided, or what I would call extremely cautious, quite the opposite.
Now, I wonder if you can address a little bit to kind of give us an idea of how his generalship compares to what the West is, because he's not overly cautious, but he is, it appears anyway, from what he did while he was actually actively involved, is that he is patient, though. For example, he took decisions that nobody else in the West or Ukraine would do in 2022, when he made a calculation that to try and hold the city of Kherson, which Russian had at the time, it was going to be too costly. So he withdrew from the city, moved back across the Dnieper River, blew the four bridges, and that basically stopped the Ukrainians. They never went beyond that. Meanwhile, he set up these five, what they ended up calling the five Surovikin lines of the defense, which were completely successful at breaking the teeth of the 2023 attack from the Ukrainian side. We can just be left to wonder what would have happened if he had remained in, because of the Prigozhin affair, he went out. Now that he's back, what does his previous attacks tell you about what he may do next?
Well, first of all, you're right. He made the correct assessment to let us and our Ukrainian proxy overreach. We overreached. A million casualties resulted. Hundreds of thousands of lives were lost pointlessly. Think of what happened after Kursk. Because when you describe Kursk, Kursk was set up initially over the objections of Stalin. Stalin wanted to attack. That's something he had in common with Hitler. They were both obsessed with attacking each other. And he was talked out of it. And I wrote a chapter in the book Margin of Victory about it, which people might want to glance at. If you look at what happened at Kursk, that's what happened to the Ukrainians. Instead of Germans, it happened to Ukrainians. Now, what you're going to see is what happened after Kursk. And what was that? Well, they moved west. But they're not going to move west the way they did initially after the fall of Stalingrad. They're not going to move west after Kursk the way they did exactly during World War II. It'll be much more deliberate, much more methodical, but it will be devastating. And you will see an integration of air and missile power with ground combat power on a scale that you have not seen yet. That's the best I can do.
Well, that's what most in the West don't believe is even possible. In fact, many people that I've queried here in Washington, D.C., just think that, no, what we've seen Russia do since 2023, since that offensive failed and taking so-called 1.5%, whatever it's been, that's because that's all they can do, and that's all they'll ever do. So this is basically a frozen conflict. It's a stalemate, and, yeah, there's lots of contact along the line, but it's not going to ever go anywhere, so we can just take our time. As a matter of fact, we saw just, I guess, earlier this week, an announcement that Germany and U.K. Are consorting to have this new missile defense capacity, a missile offense capacity, to where they'll create longer-range missiles for use by Ukraine into Russia up through the year 2034 is before all that stuff's going to come out. But they're thinking long-term that the war is just going to continue grinding on until later on they're going to be able to hit Russia even harder. What do you think about what that mess? Number one, will that work from the European side? And secondly, whether it does or not, what is the message to Russia today that they're moving that direction?
Well, remember, you had large numbers of people that told everyone Iran will fall apart. It'll collapse after 3 or 4 days. In fact, if you go back through many of General Keane's interviews and others, they dismissed it out of hand and said, well, this will be over a few days. Then it was a week. Then it was 2 weeks. And then suddenly it was, this is going to take longer. Now people in Washington, believe it or not, are talking about a stalemate that could last into next year. Now, I don't see that occurring for the reasons we've already discussed. I think it'll break down before then. But this is Washington, D.C. It's a bubble. People do not live in the world of reality. They live in a fantasy world. And that fantasy world extends to Russia. Russia is still, in their minds, something that it is not, a backward developing country that can't possibly compete with a Western military power like the United States. And when it comes to Britain and France, they are dangerously out of touch with reality. Not only can they not build any sort of air and missile defense in any time that would make any difference, that takes years and an enormous investment. And it won't work until we break the laws of fractal mathematics and relate light, gravity, and magnetism, frankly. You can create point defense and clusters, but you're not going to defend vast territories. So that's one problem. Now they want to give more weapons to Ukraine. And I think there is a real risk of two things happening. First of all, I think with Sorovikin there, it may be very hard to get those missiles into the country. I think you're going to see bridges over the Dnieper, rail lines, communications lines, all destroyed that unto now have been untouched. And we can go into, in some future point in time, what the thinking was in Moscow that left those things intact. But I think he'll go after those with a vengeance. And then the other thing is, they have built up these Oreshnik missiles with conventional munitions. And I think they're prepared to use them if they have to against NATO states that are hosting construction factories, whatever you want to call them, sites for missiles. I think that's their last option, but it's real. And we shouldn't dismiss it. And we should be concerned about it.
You know, I know we're about running out of time here. So the one last thing I want to ask you about, you mentioned how there's a lot of fantastic thinking and just disconnected from reality. I think I've got a really good example here of, you know, I'd like your view here. This is General Keith Kellogg, former National Security Advisor for the Vice President of the United States, former envoy by President Trump to Ukraine. So a key guy, somebody he listens to. He's on Fox News all the time. Here he is giving his sage wisdom on how the war in Iran can be won, and he likens it to a football game.
Here is a concern I do have for Iran, though. You have played sports, I've played sports, and you let a team hang around, a baseball team in the ninth inning or a football team in the fourth quarter, where you were clearly the better team. You should have closed them out in the first quarter, not the fourth, or the first inning, not the ninth inning. And the longer they stick around, the more dangerous they become. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And I think the president's going to close it out. He should close it out.
Yeah, I mean, that's true in sports. We see that all the time. But is that analogy applicable here to the war in Ukraine and Iran?
Well, Dan, Keith is a nice guy. But like most of the general officers, he lives in the past. He's made statements similar to what Lindsey Graham said when he was alive. Take Karg Island and you win the war. That's why, unfortunately, I think ground operations are not yet off the table. There's no evidence that taking Karg Island is going to make any difference at all, other than kill large numbers of American soldiers and Marines who go there. The same thing is true if you try to land and take Chabahar, or you're going to try and take islands closer to Bandar Abbas. It's not going to change anything. You're essentially bringing targets to bear for the Iranians to destroy, and the Iranians will welcome that opportunity. But the football business is very typical. If you wanted to get the general to get on side for some project, if you wanted to flatter his ego, you'd talk about football and the army team. And remember, it was ridiculous. And that's the level of discourse, unfortunately, in the senior ranks. We need to do a lot better. We would be better off with people like Admiral Bill Owens and Art Zabrowski and others, who were very serious thinkers, who were struggling with all of these issues back in the 90s that have now come back to haunt us.
Yeah, and we could add you to that list because you were publishing book after book, like the Margin of Victory we showed there a second ago. But all we can do is continue to be unintimidated and uncompromised to bring the truth like you have today, like you always do. And we're very grateful for that. And for those of you who want to learn more about Doug, go to McGregorWarrior.substack.com. You can continue to get articles like the one that we talked about earlier today. And he's also got a YouTube channel now. I think it's called, what's it called? McGregor Warrior? No, Warrior.
It's the same.
Diplomacy. That's what it is.
Yep. Well, everything you ever wanted to see will be there.
Very good. Yes. So go and check that out too. So you can either read stuff or you can watch it or whatever you need to do. Doug McGregor is always there, as we appreciate. Thank you very much, Doug.
Thank you, Dan. Bye-bye.
And we will see you guys later this afternoon. The next show up, Gary, I think, is it 1 o'clock? Is it? Yeah. Oh yeah. Of course. The ever amazing, John Mearsheimer is going to be back with us today at 1 PM and we will look forward to seeing you then. See you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive, and Matt Ho, of course, at 2. Don't want to miss him. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.